certainly for all of us, you know, we do this for very long at all. We sort of start on it, and then we go, oh, I see, I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to do that. And then at some point somebody says, oh, well, actually, you're already there. Just, you know, just be awake. And you go, oh, okay, but I thought I was doing something. Awake, okay, I'm going to be awake, but what is that? You know, I mean, it seems like almost like we start out with, yeah, I'm going to do this, and then as we go along, it gets almost more confusing instead of getting clearer. So I don't know that I'm going to clear that all up, but I wanted to at least offer some thoughts about it and maybe some ways to look at this journey. So I'll begin with a poem from Mary Oliver called The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though your melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough and a wild night and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. It seems we all start with from some place, something that urges us. It might be from a lot of suffering. We can come to this place of, I am in such deep dukkha, that word of unsatisfactoriness, that I have got to find a way out. There's stories, a teacher you might be familiar with is Deepa Ma. She was a teacher in India, and the story of her starting on her journey was that her husband had died, and her, I think, two of her children, and she was sick, and she could barely crawl up the stairs to the meditation hall. And from that place of suffering, talk about motivation for practice. When we're in that kind of place, we want a way out. Some of us don't come from quite there. We might, in fact, come more from an inkling, a sense that there's more possibility to life, that somehow there's something else here. We don't know quite what it is. And, you know, if you've been around for a while, you sort of try this and you try that and you sort of check things out and you're trying to find something that rings true, that seems like it's going to take you somewhere, but you're not exactly sure where. But you know there's some sense out there. And sometimes mixed in with those, we can also come into the journey through seeing others, but through inspiration. I feel, you know, certainly the people that have become in our lives very, very well known, people like the Dalai Lama, Thich Nhat Hanh, in this country, there's other, you know, Jack Kornfield has affected a lot of people, Joseph Goldstein. There's many people who have created an inspiration that somebody says, wow, there's something else possible. I'm curious. What am I going to do? And so we make some moves. We start stepping into it. And you might say we step into a stream or we start on a path. Different metaphors are often used. And at first, it can be very tentative. Maybe many people have stories of they started meditating, or somebody told them about it, you know, when they were 22, and then they tried it again when they were 28, and then they tried it again when they were 35, and then when they were 49, they actually started meditating every day. And but there's a way that even when we were 22, someone recently told me, who's now gotten quite serious about his practice, he says, I don't think the person who taught me about meditation when I was 22, and then I went away, and they never saw me again, I don't think they realized the impact on my life. Yes, it would take a while for that impact to show up, but there was this impact. And so we start to move in that direction. And then often for many of us, there's a place where there is a certain kind of faith, a certain kind of idea, yeah, there's something here. It shifts. I can think of someone I can who came on a couple of retreats, and there was a place after the second or third retreat where she all of a sudden got really clear about what feeling and being in the body and knowing what was happening for her really woke up, and she was like sparked alive. It was like, I never knew what I felt before. I never knew that this even was possible. I didn't know what I was missing. And I can think of for myself, my first two-week retreat where I sat for a while, and I was just like, wow, this is what it's like for the mind to be collected and for me to see the sky clearly and to walk under a tree. And it was, I was like, yeah, I want to do this. And you might have it just happening. You come to a few evenings, and then you come to a day, or you sit every day and you go, this sometimes happens. Somebody close to you goes, there's something different. And you go, there is. I'm not as reactive. There's something that's shifting here. And at that point, we start to realize, yes, this is worth pursuing. And I'm going to continue in this direction. At that point, we no longer feel like we have to keep looking in all sorts of different places. We go, yeah, okay, right here. And this can happen to us on this path, on the Buddhist meditation path, on the path the Buddha offered. It might happen for many people on other paths as well. But at that point, we develop a faith in where we are and the possibility. And at that point, we might have our first idea of what is it that I'm looking for? What is it that it may be simply to not suffer, to have some happiness, to have more ease in my life. And all of these things bring us forward a little bit. They give us a sense of a possibility. And we may not be sure exactly what it looks like, but we have, there's possibility here. It's like, to offer you a metaphor, it's like we, at that moment, we've been wandering around in the countryside, over hill and dale, and we've had our eyes shut, and we, walking around cross country with your eyes shut is very problematic. You end up in the brambles, you end up in the raspberries, you fall into the creek, you know, but we sort of, this is kind of how we can go through life, stumbling around, and it's like everything's attacking us, right? Because our eyes are closed, so everything feels like it's out there to get us, and then all of a sudden we go, well, actually, this could all go a lot easier if I opened my eyes. What a great idea. We open our eyes. And what other skills might be useful in this wandering around that we're doing? And it turns out the Buddha makes suggestions. Some other skills that you might want to cultivate here at the beginning are generosity and sila, or more ethical conduct. So he gives some suggestions. Oh, actually, if you want to stop running into all these brambles and everything, there's some possibilities. So we clear the stuff out of our eyes, start to see more clearly, maybe put on the right kind of shoes, get dressed for the occasion. Oh, okay. and we start to develop some abilities, some ways of moving in this terrain of life. The ethical conduct, really, as we work that, as we start cultivating wise speech and wise action and cultivating our mindfulness, it all makes moving around clearer, easier. We're less likely to get attacked, right, by all these bushes and falling branches. And then we're like, okay, I'm ready. Which way do I go? Where am I headed? What do I do now? And you might say what we're trying to do is find out where we are in this terrain, right? Where are we? And we may have we don't even have like a map, and there's no point on it, and we don't have the iPhone with the GPS with the little dot moving around telling you where you are. So we're like, where am I? Okay, I'll start looking. And so we start going in different directions. And as we open our eyes to the reality around us, we see different things. And as Gloria Steinem once said, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. So we find out where we are, and we don't really like it that much. We're not sure where we are on the map, but we know where we are. We've been, you know, our behavior we don't like that much, the way things are organized. And so we work with adjusting to this. What is it like, this place, the place, things we like about it and the things we don't, and the ways we resist the world and the ways we accept it? What's happening here? And each time we see these habits of mind, these ways that we run into things, the ways we make it more difficult, we start to realize you don't have to walk through the brambles. You actually could just walk around them. It takes a long time to learn that, but we can do it. And then you can get out into the meadow somewhere, and there's a nice view, and you start to go, oh, this is actually workable. I can do this. I can look around and know which way to go. And in our practice, as we cultivate this mindfulness, we often start to see these fruits of where to go and what... and how we can be different in our lives. I mean, there's simple ways. If you have cultivated the practice of loving kindness, that's one of the skillful means that the Buddha offered, one of the things we might do. We might start to see that our natural response to things has a more kind flavor. There's a couple of wonderful stories I like. I was actually teaching a retreat, and it was a non-residential retreat. People were going home at night, and the last... practice in the evening was a loving kindness practice. And people went home, and somebody was driving home, and they got to a stoplight, and it was green, and they were passing through it kind of slowly, as post-retreat people tend to be. And they're passing, and this car ran a red light and just right, just about hit them, just hauling it down across. And there was a moment of shock. And then the person said it was so wonderful, because instead of going into reactivity of what did that person do, they started sending metta to these people who had gone by. They go, oh, may they be safe. May the other people be safe. May they figure out what they're, you know, that they're not being present with what's happening. You know, but so that became their reaction to the situation. Someone else once told me a story of they had been doing a lot of loving kindness practice, and for those of you who don't know, metta is the word in Pali, language of the Buddha, for loving kindness. So sometimes I use those interchangeably. So they'd been doing this practice, and they woke up. They were having this nightmare with all these horrible things that we can only imagine in our nightmares. And they woke up, and they woke up, and they immediately started sending metta to everybody in their nightmare. What a great response. And we start to see also that we aren't as reactive. I remember someone telling me the story of going home during the holidays. This may happen for you, going and having family, and it was difficult for them, and it had always been difficult. And they realized it was still difficult, and there was still a place of reactivity in them. But the difference was they knew when to go out for a walk. And they did a lot of walking over Christmas, and everybody was happier. And it was like just that simple thing, to know when to go for a walk, made all the difference. The Buddha talked about this process, this movement along the path, and he used a number of metaphors for it. And he said, well, at first what we're doing is two men grab a hold of us and they're hauling us to a pit to burn us. And we struggle. And we just twist and turn our body. And he says, that's absolutely natural. You're just going to twist and turn your body. They're suffering. You're going to flail. Okay, that's your first metaphor. You don't really have a solution, but we respond. We want out of it. The second thing that happens is that we start to see some possibility, some things that are pleasant. We have some moments. And he says it's like you walk along, somebody walks along and there's a fruit tree. And they climb up the fruit tree and they're so happy up there. They're picking all the fruit. But then somebody else comes along and wants some fruit and they chop the tree down. And before they chop the tree down, you're scrambling down to get down. This is his simile for us going after what's pleasant, what is a simple thinking that getting the fruit is what's going to make us happy. But it's tentative in the world. It's dependent on the fruit being there, nobody cutting down the tree, everything being okay. To use the metaphor of walking in the terrain, on this uneven terrain that we don't have the map. Sometimes we come out into the meadow and we see and we have a nice view and it's sunny. But if we only can stay in the meadow to be happy, that makes us stay in a pretty small world if we're afraid to leave the meadow. So then his next metaphor is somebody goes to the forest to get the heartwood. And heartwood is often used as the metaphor for the real thing, the awakening, the pith of life. And they go there to get the heartwood, but they come back with branches and bark. And so they have a sense it's there, but they got satisfied too easily. They came back with, yeah, they found the tree, but they didn't keep going. And I'm really struck by, in the last few years I had contact with two different amazing masters, which one was a Korean Zen monk who I had the privilege of staying at his monastery in India. And then also a Tibetan man, and both of them, a Tibetan teacher, and both of them were as awake people as I've ever interacted with. And both of them, the Zen monk walked around with his beads, and what he was doing was here, you know, stay awake. They both communicated to me this urgency to, moment after moment, pay attention to your mind. Don't think that you're done. Don't think that any moment is not available for waking up. Every moment is available for waking up, but you have to keep staying there. Keep staying there. Keep staying with the heartwood. Don't get distracted. And then another metaphor that the Buddha used was, if you want milk from the cow, you can milk the horn for a long time and it won't get you very far, but if you go to the udder, it's going to work out. So it's a reminder to keep staying with what works, you know, keep staying on the path. Don't get distracted and go wandering off with other ideas. And his last metaphor, and he does these all in one teaching, you know, quite a complex. And the last one is, somebody is looking for a bull elephant, and they see a big footprint, and they don't assume that it's a bull elephant. It could be a really large female elephant. It's probably an elephant, but he doesn't know if it's a bull elephant. And he follows it, and he sees that it's cleared a big distance around it in the forest. Still, it could just be a big female elephant. It might be a bull, might not. When you get to the bull elephant, and he's right there in front of you, you can see it. Then you know it's the bull elephant. When you're awake, you'll know you found the bull elephant. If you have any question, keep going. So the Buddha presented these metaphors, and we talk about these ideas of going somewhere, of this working on the path. And then we have some other ideas that come in, that we might already be there. T.S. Eliot says, "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." So we go around, but we are circling on the same spot. We come back here. What does that mean? And I think one of the ways of understanding this, there's a couple that I'll offer. One of the ways of understanding that is that we're the possibility of waking up, the possibility of this moment being enough, being full, is here in every single moment. Some people talk about this as a sacred outlook, that you don't need to be in the meadow. You can be in the forest, in the creek. You can be in all sorts of different places and wake up right there. I remember, this is many years ago, I was sitting a long retreat, and I was having one heck of a retreat. One very difficult, painful experience after another, day after day after day. I don't know exactly I do know some things that were creating that, but we won't go into that. But I was having a really difficult time, and I was exhausted. I had cried every day for weeks. And I think around day 25 on a month-long retreat, and this was actually at Spirit Rock over 10 years ago, and there was it was a rather legendary February in that it rained every day. We never saw the sun, so I'm sure that really helped. And one day I was just so tired of it all. And I just went outside, and it was pouring down rain, and I just walked, and then the path that I was on got to a creek. And to get across the creek, I had to I had to get wet. So I started across the creek. I was getting wet, and I was just like, and I started walking down the creek. And the creek was somewhere between knee height and thigh height, stepping down these rocks. You can tell I was not in a good state of mind. So I'm in this pouring rain, walking down this muddy creek, and I'm stepping down it. It's just sort of doing whatever. And I keep going, and I just keep walking, and I'm all wet, and I get to a road, the little driveway, and the creek goes under the driveway in a culvert. And I wasn't done walking down the creek, so I walked right into the culvert. So now I'm walking through this culvert that's about 4 feet high. It's about half full of water. And about halfway through the culvert, I realized where I was. And I started laughing. I was like, this has got to be the silliest thing ever. I'm walking through a culvert in the pouring rain in this retreat center, and I just burst into laughing. I knew right where I was, and everything shifted in that moment. No telling. Might be that you have a moment of understanding in the culvert under the road instead of in the meadow with the sun. The non-resistance, not stopping to resisting you wherever the place is that you are. That's where you are. Here's a poem from Hafiz called A Thousand Serious Moves. What is the difference between your existence and that of a saint? The saint knows that the spiritual path is a sublime chess game with God, and that the beloved has just made such a fantastic move that the saint is now continually tripping over joy and bursting out in laughter and saying, I surrender. Whereas, my dear, I am afraid you still think you have a thousand serious moves. So, right where we are, I surrender. And we have these moments where we see clearly, where we're right here. And then what? As one teacher I know once said, I don't believe the purpose of life is to stay still. And if you... when you have these experiences, that might be it's like, how do I stay right here, right? I got it, how do I stay? But we can't stay there. We have to move. It is of our nature to move. And then we move, and we get confused. We're not sure exactly where we are again. Another opportunity to wake up. But we get the possibility of stringing these moments together, sometimes to gaps where we get confused, and sometimes we actually know where we are for a series of steps. And as we do this over and over again, we get this sense that the terrain is becoming more familiar. There isn't a path in the way that there is a direction that somebody else can tell us, here's the path, here's the map, you go down this. Every single one of us is gonna walk it a different way. But we discover it unfolds for us as we have these moments, here I am. And then we go, so here I am. And we can look back behind us and see where we've been. I love this poem by Antonio Machado. You walking, your footprints are the road and nothing else. There is no road, walker. You make the road by walking. By walking, you make the road. And when you look backward, you see the path that you never will step on again. Walker, there is no road. Only wind trails in the sea. You make the path. And when you look back, it starts to make sense. Many years ago, I don't remember who said this first that I heard, but they said, don't measure your practice by how did it go today, or how does it go this week, or this year. You should measure your practice by the decades. And I was at the beginning of my practice, and this was an interminable idea. I was not into this at all. But now, decades, just a couple of them, and hopefully there's more, I can go, oh, I see why that person said that. You can look back and see where you are. Just as you can over your life, you can look back and see your path has been so individual, and where you are now is the result of so many things that brought you here. Not just your sitting meditation, your this, not just here I'm talking about. This, all the things that brought to you that first even made you interested in cultivating a spiritual journey, cultivating this practice. And we look back and we can see. And as we see our path, it still doesn't tell us what's in front of us, does it? We think if we knew, once we've done all this, that somehow we should know. But what it does do over time is gives us more and more faith that we can do this, that we can keep stepping forward, and it will keep getting clearer, and there will be more possibility. And that is a wonderful thing, to have that sense of it's possible. I can do this. I can take the next step. I want to mention one other interpretation or thing that comes out about the path of no path. And sometimes we hear that, wake up now. There's no path. Be here. You know, all you need to do is wake up in this moment. And it's absolutely true. If we could, we would. I certainly would. And if you look carefully, that instruction is often given by people who are wide awake, who can look back and it has all burned up behind them. They go, it's so obvious. We're like fish in the water, and the water is everywhere. Ajahshanti talks about it this way. No matter what spiritual path you've walked or what teachings you followed, they must lead you back to no path and no teaching. A true teaching is like a blazing fire that consumes itself. The teaching must not only consume you, but consume itself as well. All must be burned to ash, and then the ash must be burned. Then and only then is the ultimate realized. Rings really true to me. But for those of us who aren't right there, we still need to keep stumbling through the terrain. We can keep needing to pick ourselves up and take another step. And then there will be those moments when it all burns up, when there is nothing else but the freedom in that moment. So I want to talk a few minutes about awake. What is this? What is this awakeness? What is this moment? And I think one of the most useful things is to talk about it as awakening rather than enlightenment. Enlightenment, doesn't it? It's a noun. It has this static quality, right? Something's going to happen, and then there it is. It's all done. And awakening is a verb. It's an ongoing event. There's this awakening. And we have each moment that we know right where we are in all sorts of different ways. We have these experiences of awakening. We can understand impermanence deeply, a not self. We understand unsatisfactoriness. We can have incredible openings of the heart, the experiences of loving kindness and compassion. And we're creating this whole, you could say it's looking at a prism, all the different sides. Or you could say we're getting the lay of the land, the terrain of awakeness. It's all these different things. And it has different flavors in different moments. And each time we have the experience of awakeness, it often is followed by an ongoing period of cultivation. You often hear that phrase, sudden awakening and gradual cultivation, because there's this way we're awake, And then we sort of figure out the terrain that is now available to us. Where can we walk in the world now? How can we move, actually expressing this awakeness that we now understand? And then when we're lucky, we notice, our awakeness helps us notice when we walk into terrain where we're not awake, where we have blind spots, where we actually, instead of becoming embarrassed and hiding our reactivity or the places where we're hidden from ourselves or where we aren't kind, instead we go, look, there's a place that's available for cultivation. And we cultivate. And then we may have awakening there. And it might move us on to other places. And being involved in this process. And one of the things that really is happening here is our capacity to respond to the world is being cultivated. You may have heard that phrase, that the story of a Zen master being asked at the end of his life, so what's the fruit of a lifetime of practice? And he says, an appropriate response. Now, some people find that really demoralizing. That's it? That's all I get? But in some ways, it's so simple, right? It's like to actually be right here, right now, and to be able to respond with an open heart and mind and... What a beautiful expression. And it's not like all of us are going to respond the same way. It's so important to remember in this that you, as you are, this is the only time you is ever going to happen. And the divine expression of you, the fruition of awakening, of being awake in a moment, is that that divine expression comes through. Not that you start looking like somebody else. It's that you experience this moment. Your appropriate response comes through. Hafiz, there's a story about Hafiz. Somebody came to him and said, I want to practice. You know, I want to follow this teacher. How do I know if he's a... And he seems like he's awake, but how do I know if he's awake? And Hafiz says, you want to call him? Okay. Does this teacher have a wife? Yeah, he has a wife. How does he teach? How does he treat his wife? His wife, fine. And how does he have people that work for him? So, yeah. How does he treat them? Does he have animals? How does he treat them? How does he respond to the land that he lives on? That's how you tell if somebody's awake. Another expression that I like to mix in here is the idea that you've probably heard. To be awake is to be without anxiety about imperfection. Doesn't mean it all becomes perfect. It means it all becomes workable. And this is really important. It's the image of a path sometimes can be helpful for us. But if we set up the idea that there's a goal at the end, then we've set ourselves up for, what if we don't get there? Then have we failed? No. No. To be awake in this moment is always available to us. This process of seeing yourself right where you are, in the field, in the creek, in the culvert, wherever you are in your daily life, in the moment with someone you care about, in the moment with a difficult person in your life. Each one of those moments, you can go, here I am. Here I am. How do I respond? How do I bring this, the fullest expression of myself, to this, or even the fullest expression of my potential, my clear, open expression of this being. And if we take that approach, if we have that attitude, then we can enjoy ourselves wherever we are. We can enjoy the moments that are pleasant. We can enjoy the moments that are... Enjoy isn't quite the right word. We can make them workable. We can see that they're a gateway. We can have that sacred outlook that each one of the moments in our day offer the possibility to be wide awake. It doesn't have to be a particular one, and you don't have to be a particular person waiting for some sort of incredible experience that's going to happen when you sit down next time to meditate. You can just be right here, right now, with what you have. We will each find our own way, the pathless path, coming alive in the world, looking back to where we've been, and having faith that we can go forward. I end with a poem from David Wagner called Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. Listen, the forest breathes, it whispers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here, just here. No two trees are the same, to raven, no two branches the same, for wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, then you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are, and you must let it find you. So we'll let the word settle for just a moment. Stand still. Here. Just here. Thank you. And I'd like to take a few questions if people have any, or comments, or whatever anyone wants to bring in. Does anybody have anything they want to ask or say? Oh, there's someone. Yeah.
We use the words react and respond. Do they mean the same thing?
Good question. No, they're very different. Reactivity is that place where without any mindfulness, without clarity, we react in our habitual pattern. You know, somebody does something and you get angry, you know, and you just go right to some way of reacting that you're just get there quick. Responding is actually what you do when something happens. There's a space, and you see what's actually here and what's there, and you take in the factors, and you're able to respond from a place of clarity. Does that make sense? It's a very, I'm using the words quite differently.
So is that where you kick in Dharma teaching, or does mindfulness just give us clarity even with beyond the teaching?
Both work. And just bringing mindfulness to the moment will give you incredible skill in that moment. You know what's happening. You feel inside yourself. And then if you have, in that moment, you might go, actually, I can see that I'm not going to use wise speech right here. I'm about to say something that isn't useful. And you actually might even recognize that you're being reactive. And you might go, and I don't know what to say. And you might go, I think what I'll do is wait. I'm not going to say anything. So that might be the wisest response in that moment. Go for a walk.
Yeah.
So there you've brought in the mindfulness and then a piece of teaching that you might recall.
And the reaction, is that just from conditioning?
Yeah. Yeah, we all have this. As the Buddha says, ignorance is beginningless. We all have this, you know, history. We are taught so many things, but we are not, you know, we have reacted to all our causes and conditions the life that, you know, we have led, the childhood we had. And we did it without a lot of consciousness. We did it with our eyes closed. Not our fault. And from that, we've developed all these habits. Okay, well, thanks, and I